Welcome to Uncharted Living. We're your hosts, Christine, Rebecca, and Ty. We are life coaches who are committed to the road less traveled. Join us each week for thought-provoking and entertaining conversations, all designed to help you create your own map. Uncharted Living. It's just the beginning. Don't be afraid to get life started. Jump off the map. Hello, fellow humans. You know how everybody says they hate small talk? Today, we're going to test that theory with some big talk. We're going to take turns asking and answering questions that none are about the weather. So let's see how we do with the big talk. I'm so excited, you guys.
Hey, everyone.
Hello.
Who wants to start? Becca and Christine, ooh, thanks for being here.
I can't wait. No small talk. Let's dive right in. Mm-hmm. Okay, my first question is for Christine.
All right.
Christine, one of the things I've noticed about you and I love about you is that you have these like super long-lasting, really intimate friendships. And I just need to know, and I'm sure everyone listening needs to know, what does it take? What's the secret to maintaining lifelong friendships?
Well, thank you. I love my friends, and to all my friends listening, I love you. I think it comes from recognizing that all of your friends don't have to be the same level of friends. So sometimes we say right now, like, oh, you can have all of these quote friends on Facebook, but you really only have a small handful of friends. And so if you have other quote friends, they're not actually real friends. I think we've made a binary choice recently or in society where it's like you either have real friends or you have fake friends or fake followers. And what I would bring to this conversation is it's somewhere in the middle. So I have friends that I have had since, I mean, Joycey was on our podcast. She and I have been friends since we were 10, 11 years old. And we have not lived in the same area, you know, for most of our adult lives, but we have that like connection from the beginning. And basically we met at a church camp or choir, and we both looked over at each other and caught each other's eyes. And both of us were thinking the exact same thing, which is like, this is nonsense. Not the faith part, but like what we were actually doing. And we just became good friends. And so we have some really formative memories from that. We've gone through a lot together, but because we're not in the same state all the time or haven't been in the same state, you know, you work at it. And so we don't, that's not someone who I call when I have just some sort of minor problem. We kind of save the time for all of the big stuff. So you have to invest in your friends, but invest in them in the right, kind of in the right way. So you can have friends in different seasons of your life. And that's really great. And those can be intimate to a point. I think though, for your really soulmate kind of friends, and I love thinking about it like this. I think the New York Times just released an article talking about how our romantic partnerships should not really be the end all be all of our relationships, because so many friendships get cast by the wayside when we enter into a romantic partnership. And in fact, it should be the friendships, I don't want to say that are more important, but as important, deserving of our time as much as the romantic partnerships. So I have a core group of friends from college, and we all live in different places, but we make the effort every single year to get together. And that year is sacred. And nothing, that year is on the books. And that's sacred.
The weekend. Not the year, the weekend.
It's like, well, yeah, it started off as a weekend. And then it, now it's like 5 days, because we can't bear to have less time than that. And so when we get together, then we talk about like a year's worth of stuff all at once, but it fills me up for a whole year. So I have friends in my life where I'm sharing day-to-day things. You know, friends that you make from your kid's school or friends that you make in your community, they don't have to be the deep down friend. So I think just hopefully I'm making sense. You don't have to have the same expectation for all of your friendships. And it doesn't mean that if you're not sharing deepest, darkest secrets, that they are not true friends. It's fine to have different tiers of, again, who gets access to you, who knows the real deep stuff, who knows where all the like bodies are buried. And you have to invest in people. And a lot of these friendships, my closest friendships predate me meeting my husband by 10 years, right? I met them all when I was, you know, 18, first day of college. I didn't meet my husband until I was 20, I don't know, six or seven. And so I think it's just the investment of time and sort of the right kind of time and being cool with like, these people know the real deepest stuff and these other people may not. And that's fine. It doesn't make them less of a friend.
And I want to give a shout out to people who don't have this at all. Mm. That would be me.
Yeah.
Right. So there's different levels. There's different like color palettes of being friends, and it doesn't all revolve around exactly having, you know, 18-year-old friends and now you're 45. And I think that people can make and lose friends as they go. And I think Christine has really put a lot of time and effort into her friendships. And I feel kind of like, well, we're really good friends and we only met 2 years ago. So also I think there's true. Like, right. So it's never too late, maybe is what I'm trying to say, because absolutely. I don't want anybody listening who might fall in my category, which is like, well, I clearly suck because I don't have this core group of five girlfriends.
You didn't and like, make these we all, friends in middle school.
Yeah. I just wanted to give a shout out for that in case anybody was like, well, damn it, I guess I missed the boat.
Yeah. I think the question was lifelong friends. So these are the lifelong
friends. Yeah. Yeah. Which is why, I mean, I fall in Ty's category. I don't have a lot of lifelong friendships. And so it's very interesting to me. I'm like observing from the sidelines, like what's going on in here? You know, like it's like I don't know, a ride at the fair. Like, tell me more.
Quite a ride. You know what? It's people. Those are the core. And then there's other friends. I mean, I've met you guys and I feel like I've known you for a million years. And that is such an important thing for you to say, Ty, is that it's not like you're not on a schedule. It's not like too early, too late or whatever.
Yeah.
When you meet a friend and it's someone who you really connect with, you know, spiritually, energetically, emotionally, mentally, like you just have the same goals or whatever, that's wonderful, but it also takes time. And so we spend time, you know, we don't all live together, but we, you know, we make the time to check in and
we don't all live in one big house together.
That's another episode. but yeah, so.
No, thanks for sharing that, Christine. I'm just curious about it all.
My question for you is, you are a parent to two teenagers, as am I. And what would you say to me and to other parents of teenagers? What is the most important thing that we should be focused on in this season?
That's a great question. And you know what? I'm going to answer to you and to other parents and to other non-parents, anybody who might want to hang out with a teenager, has any kind of nephews or nieces or cousins, etc. My advice to what to focus on for teenagers is pull back, widen your scope, big picture. Mental health is so much more important than academics. So, you know, the three of us are graduates of life coaching school. And we learn the four categories of human experience. They are circumstance that lead to thoughts, thoughts that lead to feelings, feelings that lead to behavior, right? Mm-hmm. So you might be saying, well, what am I looking for in terms of mental health? As a parent, what am I looking for? You're looking for behavior that doesn't match at all with their circumstance, because that means something in the middle, the thoughts and the feelings, are maybe out of sorts. So you can have a sad kid. That's a behavior that they're moping or they're distant, but the circumstance might call for that. That's appropriate behavior for the circumstance, right? For parents, for mentors, coaches, if you know a teenager, mental health, mental health, mental health. They might be getting good grades. That's nice. They might be doing a sport. Oh, that's nice too. Okay. But if your teenager is displaying behavior that is wildly out of step with their circumstances, that is a red flag. Because when your circumstances lead to thoughts and your feelings and then behavior, somewhere in there, there's something going on. And it's not your fault. I think, Christine, your question is really important in that don't take any blame as a parent or a guardian or a grandparent, whoever you might be. Just listen and watch and hold space with compassion. Your kid, teenager, young adult may need a therapist. They may need a life coach. I personally think all teenagers need a life coach. I certainly would have loved to have a life coach. Just to speak to somebody who's going to not judge you or not tell you where you're wrong or not tell you it's okay constantly. If you're an outsider or if you're not cool or if you're not arty enough or smart enough or thin enough or whatever the thing is, right? Can we take a step back and just say, damn it, my kid's awesome. And not because they got an award and not because they're getting a freaking 5.20 GPA, just because they're doing life. You know, when we make these things for colleges and lists of accomplishments and awards, I'm like, dude, it's an accomplishment just to be a teenager today, just to like function. That's just like, if, and in a, this goes actually beyond, way beyond kids, but especially kids and maybe, you know, young adults and grown ass adults, you know, when your behavior is so off from your circumstance, and the reason I say that is because any sadness, any negative behavior isn't bad. Life can be sucky. That's okay. Kids can be unhappy. But if it persists in a way that seems way beyond a kind of reasonable reaction to the circumstance. And maybe that just means you don't know any more circumstances. There could be more circumstances. And that's something also that you're there for, right? As a guardian, you need to know those things. I get to go. Can I go? Becca, I'm so excited. I mentioned the Enneagram earlier and I'm really into it. And I want to know, as an Enneagram practitioner, how has it helped you or changed your perspective?
So helpful.
Oh, I love this question. And as a life and business coach and Enneagram practitioner, these things all go super hand in hand. So a lot of my clients use it. Some aren't interested in it. And in that case, we just sort of set that tool to the side. But I think it's first helpful to understand what the Enneagram is. I think it surprises me sometimes how few people have actually heard of it. And maybe some of our listeners are in that same category. Yeah. So it's just quite simply a map of the 9 fundamental personality types we see in human nature. So, and within each of these 9 personality types, there are this web of interconnectedness that speaks to different behaviors you might see, different natural tendencies when we approach conflict, and also how we understand our own selves. So how we understand our own learning process, our own thinking process, mm-hmm. which as coaches is a huge piece of the puzzle, right? When we're helping someone take a step back, look a big picture, and see where they want to go, this can be a really helpful tool. What I think I really love about it is there's a couple things. The first is that there's a million and one tests you can take for the Enneagram, mm-hmm. but it's really designed as a self-typing system. Mm. So I have my clients do an online test, mm-hmm. but then we spend time talking about that and also looking at the other 8 types, whatever the ones they weren't assessed with, mm-hmm. and look at some of the things within that whole system that they might also resonate with. So sometimes it's really common for people to, if they're just taking an online quiz, to mistype themselves. And when they understand the rest of it, they're like, actually, that doesn't sound like me at all. This one is more, you know, in tune with how I sort of understand myself. And a big piece of that is because the systems, like the assessment tests, are only measuring behaviors, and the Enneagram is really looking at motivations and fears. Mm. And those can be, the behaviors behind some of those things can look very similar for some of the different types, but they mean very different things. So it's a much larger conversation. And it's a tool that has helped me understand my own self better. It's helped me understand my loved ones better. It helps me understand you two better as colleagues and collaborators, right? And it brings common language. So for people who are, you know, in a workplace environment and there's conflict that of course will arise at some point, it's really helpful to understand everyone on your team, how they might be approaching a situation or a point of conflict, to understand where to start and to have common language when you're coming from different backgrounds and different experiences. That's a big piece of what's missing in just relationships in general. It can really help you in a romantic relationship. It can help you in family dynamics.
How has it helped you, Becca? Like, what's like one tiny thing that you're like, oh, I'm this, so it's okay that I'm this way? Or maybe I'm crazy.
No, you're not. Why would you be crazy? No. You're asking more specific.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, and we're going to do, for everyone listening at home, we're going to do an episode on the Enneagram coming up. So stay tuned for that. Like and follow so you don't miss that. So I'll give you just my own example, right? I, for a really long time, I tested like 3 different types when I first came to the Enneagram because I, in different moments of life, can have different presenting things. I'm an Enneagram 9, which means I'm a peacemaker. Mm. And I can very easily see every sort of type on the wheel, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I can very easily put myself in the other shoes of the person I'm talking to, but I am married to someone who is a 7, and mm-hmm. that is not necessarily always the case. And so understanding that has really helped the two of us in terms of like our marital conflict, right? Mm-hmm. Because I can understand that Lindsay is going to be really enthusiastic about something and want to just move forward with that. And I'm a lot more careful and a lot more calculated and a lot more slow to sort of like adapt the new thing, right? Whatever that is. Mm-hmm. And so that can just be a helpful thing for us to know about one another. And that's a very simple example, but you can see how that could play out in the workplace as well, where, you know, it might be advantageous for you to put someone who's a, who's very good at like bringing the team together and considering all of the viewpoints into a position where you might need to have more awareness, if that makes sense. And then for someone who needs to spearhead a project and really rally the troops, so to speak, having a 7 go in with that enthusiasm is magnet. It's like the person you want running the flag at the front of the line. You're like, we're going this way, right? So those are just helpful things to know. And typically when someone, you know, types themselves accurately, they feel like they are, like their needs are being met then too in those scenarios when they feel like they can bring their full skill set. So who doesn't want that?
Love that. Right?
Yeah, I've heard so many people say the Enneagram has saved their marriage. It's really bananas how many people have said those words. I don't know. It's really interesting. And it's just an area I'm super interested in.
Yeah. Well, there's more to come.
Yeah. Yeah. Stay tuned if you're interested in that for all of our fellow humans. Christine, can I ask you a question?
Of course.
a big talk question, not a small talk question. Yeah. What are you bringing from – you were a corporate lawyer. You might be taking the biggest pivot of the three of us in doing the life coaching. What are you bringing from your corporate lawyer former life into your new life coach life?
So – great question. Great big question. And I think I had a very unique perspective as a lawyer. So I think I was always like a life coach inside, but, you know, playing a lawyer on TV kind of thing. because the way that I approached having clients, and same with my partners, and thank God I was, you know, I'm with a firm where we really have the same mindset in terms of our clients. But the number one goal for lawyers, or should be, is to make their clients feel safe. That's what we're there to do. People hire us to make them feel safe. They're in the middle of, you know, litigation. I'm a litigator, so it's always, you know, combative. You're always got opposing counsel. You've always got all these problems. And the client just wants you to make them feel safe. And I think same thing in, and they don't want you to judge them, right? So it's not my job to say, well, man, I can't believe you did all this stuff, or I can't believe this is how you keep your documents. No, it's no judgment, and it's to make you feel safe. And then the next step is to, on behalf of clients, I become their voice. So I advocate on their behalf. So life coaching is very similar, right? The number one thing is I want to make a space, where people feel safe no matter what, and that they're not being judged. But instead of becoming their voice for them, I help them find their own voice. So with my clients, I don't need to go into a courtroom and fight on their behalf, but I can actually help them have tools and things to find their own voice, whether it's in their workplace, whether it's in their relationships, whether it's, you know, in their parenting, whether it's dealing with healthcare providers because they're in chronic pain. I'm a safe place. I'm not judging anything they're doing, and I'm equipping them to find their own voice. So I think, yeah, safety, wow, no judgment, voice are all the things that kind of I really can take with me to my, with my coaching. And I actually think because I'm coaching and still practicing law a little bit, that it's actually the coaching is also making me a better lawyer. I think both things are true, which is pretty cool.
That's so cool. Yeah. Thanks, Christine.
Wow, Christine. Sure.
Yeah. And you thought lawyers were just there to be obnoxious and make money.
Totally.
Absolutely. I have a question for Ty.
Yeah.
Here. Ty, as a life coach, what is one piece of advice that you would give our listeners?
My advice is, if you are over 30, look in your yearbook to see how far we've come. If you're under 30, look at your parents' yearbook to see how far we've come. What I mean by that is, in our way of queer representation, non-binary understanding, diversity, gay people, addiction, mental health, Me Too, eating disorders, mixed race, neurodiversity, women in sports, fat acceptance. These are things that are really new, and some of the catalysts for these things came from really bad things happening, and bad things happen in life, but sometimes the result is really, really good. And I'm not saying everything's really great right now. I'm saying better is better, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it continually blows my mind that there is a gay straight alliance club at almost every school that I work with. That's a nice for LA situation, right? So I'm in Los Angeles. And,
great for LA. Yeah,
great for LA. But I mean, that's pretty common here where I'm working and living and where I have lived most of my life. If you look at my yearbook, we didn't know the word neurodiversity. I mean, I had a hyphenated last name for my whole life. My mother and father, biological, are divorced. And so I had a hyphenated last name. And that was so weird when I was growing up. I graduated high school in 1992, and I didn't know a single person who had a hyphenated last name. I mean, this is kind of a, you know, basic example, but I'm just like, now it's everybody has, not everybody, but it's very common, again, in LA, for me to get kids who have hyphenated last names, or who, we don't take it for granted ever at all that my student would have the same last name as their mothers or fathers or mother and father or whatever. And also, we just have more, I know that social media and screens get such a bad rap, but a lot of people are making a living on their own terms through these kinds of means, right? There's people who are creating their own, you know, quote, brand, and you can make easy jokes about, oh, influencers or blah, blah, blah. But for people who live in a marginalized area, for them to be celebrating who they are and actually making a living, I'm talking about TikTokers and YouTube. I'm talking about the, you know, drag queen who does math on TikTok. Like, yes, give me more of her. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then there's just more representation. So my advice, look at somebody's yearbook and see how far we've come.
Becca, you up for another question?
Yes. Maybe just one more.
What has surprised you the most about becoming a coach?
Yeah. The thing that has surprised me the most about being a coach is how much it requires of me. And one of the reasons I got into this line of work is because first of all, it had a huge impact on me as a client, but also because I could see, I almost use it as a practice. Like I speak about my practice, but it's like, I have to show up for my clients already having done my own work and gotten my own coaching and having really, really being able to use the tools that I teach to have clear energy around it and to have clean energy around it. And it's what one of the things that drew me to this, but also then that means that is required of me all of the time, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that I don't know that that's always as, like, I don't necessarily lead with that, but it really is a constant reminder for me of, like, making sure I'm not only just taking my own advice, but that I'm constantly doing my own work. Mm-hmm. And that's just going to be a new lifestyle, like a new way of thinking about it. It just has to, right? Yeah. But I signed up for it and I'm into it, but it is, I think it has surprised me at certain points. I'm like, oh, wow. Like this is constant. I have the same question for you, Christine, that I just asked Ty a little while ago, but I'm really curious, as a life coach, what's one piece of advice that you would give our listeners?
So it's really simple, but really helpful. And it's actually two things that for all of my clients. And one is to breathe. One is literally to breathe. I start every session with my clients. I ask their permission if they want to do it. And everyone's like, yeah, we need to start with some breathing. And it just kind of gets you ready for the session. It gets your brain kind of focused and coming into, you know, kind of a sacred space and to discuss everything that's kind of about them going on. So, and then I just remind them to breathe. I give them tools to breathe throughout the week. And I know that is so simple, but it is so effective. So it's really breathe. And then also feel the feels about the things that need to be felt, right? Whether it's really great. I think for people who are hyper achievers, we generally like just move on to the next thing. Oh yeah, I just did this big thing and now I'm moving on to the next thing and then the next thing. And we don't stop to really celebrate and feel like how great it is to have accomplished that. And yeah. Then the reverse is true. Like if something bad happens, we're so quick to just get to the next thing so that we don't have to feel that. And feeling the highs, feeling the lows, and then moving those through your body, those are some huge pieces of advice that I give and work and are relevant to whatever kind of client I have. So those are the two big pieces.
Beautiful.
I love the breathing, Christine. And there's a lot of breathing apps out there, but the plug for our own Uncharted Living has quick breathing episodes. So if you guys see those 2-minute episodes, they're usually guided breathing. And keep on looking
absolutely.
For those.
And I've had a lot of clients nice say that it's really helped them. It's helped them before meetings or hard conversations or anything like that, just to reset. And again, you're not going for, you know, 6 months, you know, to hang with the Dalai Lama. It's 2 minutes to kind of calm yourself. But what is something good that high schoolers possess that gets lost in adulthood? And how do we get that back?
So first of all, good is a relative term, right? So I'm talking about what my perception of good is, that kids that I know, students that I know, will give themselves breaks. They prioritize play. They prioritize fun. They prioritize doing nothing. If it's the end of summer break, wherever you guys are, did you, as an adult, take a freaking break, right? So my advice on how to get that back is pretend to some degree that you are still in school and still have a summer break, a winter break, and a spring break. They're called breaks for a reason. It's a break from school. It's a break from, you know, communicating with your peers and your teachers. That is getting very lost in terms of what I see with my clients. Is there always is this ticker? There's always a to-do list. There's always something on fire, and we do not prioritize breaks. So, what can you do? I'm asking our listeners at home, what do you like to freaking do? Honestly, you know, with all of the work and all of the life, and if you have kids or if you have elderly parents who need help, even 5 minutes of listening to your favorite songs, of drawing. The other thing my kids do, you guys, is they have freaking hobbies. Like so many students, I mean, they're recording music at home. They're doing all this really fun stuff. And I'm just like, wow, what? And, you know, the pandemic really supersized my plant collection. And the care that I give to my plants is kind of the way I feel about my dogs, is that they require care that is not work for me. I don't consider it work. If I considered all these freaking plants and these two demanding dogs work, they'd be out the door. I'd be like, get out. But because they represent, you know, a break for me, I'm just, you know, when I walk through the back door, backyard, and Ruby's just like laid out in the sun, I'm just like, yes. It's kind of a hobby too. Whatever break, whatever hobby, whatever thing that is that makes you not do work just for 5 minutes. I really, really promote that.
Yeah, we're big
on
that.
I give you permission. Real quick, Becca, what challenges have you faced in your lifetime that seemed unbearable at the time, but looking back, you wouldn't change?
Yeah. I mean, the only one that always comes to mind around this for me is when I came out after being in a super conservative Christian fundy, which is like a new term for me, but I love it so much, fundamentalist, fundy bubble. And I came out, and it was painful for me at the time because it separated me a lot from my community and raised so many questions, right? And I really wish I would have had a life coach at that time. I did actually have an amazing therapist who was brilliant and amazing and helped me truly get through some serious times. But like the thing that it did, and the reason I'm so grateful for it, was because with the untangling from that bubble, I had to kind of look around and be like, okay, what else is there? And it was really affirming for me to know that I did not abandon myself during that time. And it just reinstated for me that like, that was a bond that I was never going to break. And I think that served me really well. And I think it's one of the things I bring to my clients now is like, I teach them how to do that for themselves in a way that's really meaningful. So they may not be going through this like, you know, major pulling away from their entire community. Some are, but the majority of them are really trying to figure out how to make a big shift or how to do something that feels super scary and not abandon themselves in the process. And that is not something that we learn necessarily, or we unlearn that in adulthood. We have to like remind ourselves how to do that. And so that's that time for me. Thank you all so much for listening to our big talk. This is, I think I can already say, probably a topic that we'll bring back to the podcast. If you have any questions for us that you'd like us to answer, please, please, please send them to us in all the ways, whatever way you know how to get a hold of us, please do. You can check the show notes. Because we're going to be doing a couple episodes upcoming around some of these topics that we've talked about, the Enneagram being one of them, please subscribe or follow Uncharted Living Podcast on whatever platform you use. It's going to make sure that we're able to keep doing this and bringing this to you, and also that you don't miss out on any of those episodes that you might be really interested in hearing. So it's a win-win. And we're excited to continue the conversation. Ty, Christine, thank you both so much. We'll see you all next week.
Thanks, you guys.
Bye.
Bye. This is great. Bye.
Thank you so much for spending another week with us. Follow us at Uncharted Living Podcast on Instagram and TikTok. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. And please like and share this episode with your favorite fellow human. Uncharted.